I will call this meeting of the Marion County Board of Supervisors to order. Roll call. Danny?
Keisha Donner.
Here.
Mark Ramey.
Here.
Steve McComb.
Here.
Thank you. I'll entertain a motion to approve this morning's agenda.
I move to approve today's agenda.
Second.
Motion and support. Danny?
McCombs.
Aye.
Ramey.
Aye.
Johnner.
Aye.
Jake, any communications received by your office?
No, sir.
On to public comments. This is the portion of our agenda that public can speak on items not on this morning's agenda. The board cannot act on those items, but they could be topics for future Board of Supervisor meetings. Are there any public comments on items not on this morning's agenda? Seeing none, we will entertain a motion for this morning's consent agenda.
Motion to approve today's consent agenda.
Second.
Ramey.
Aye.
Johnner.
Aye.
McCombs.
Aye.
Very good. On to business. First item is a little bit of a refresh on the financial scenarios for the VA campus Prairie Ridge project. We've been having a lot of comments, a lot of discussion, especially relative to the school bond issue. Jake, do we have the slides up for Prairie Ridge? Perfect. I knew Jake would be ready. So I just wanted to run through this at a high level again for the board, from the board's perspective, and just so people could get the numbers in their mind. We can certainly discuss any of these that you would like. These are all prepared from Mike Maloney, D.A. Davidson. He's been our financial consultant on these projects. You can see from the high level right there, the basic issue out of this slide right here is that we are limited to 5% of actual valuation in terms of GO debt, general obligation debt that we can issue. Our debt limit is $129 million. We currently have $1.7 million of outstanding. That should be county, not city. That's a typo. And so that gives us a considerable amount of capacity to work with, $127 million of capacity to work with. Traditionally, Marion County has not leveraged debt. There's been, other than the law enforcement center, which was roughly about $8 million, which that's the 1.7 that remains. That's the law enforcement center. Again, from the slides we've gone through before, what the takeaway from this slide is all of the things that we are doing relative to the VA and Prairie Ridge will give us an opportunity to take dollars, and Mike, you have to remind me what those dollars are called. They're the dollars we're capturing for low and middle income.
Yeah, low and moderate income.
LMI. Yes. There's an acronym for that. But everything from an acronym, from an LMI perspective, we will be able to capture, it's going to be on the next slide, and then use that across Marion County. Before, on other projects, if Pella did this for them, by themselves, or if Knoxville did this by themselves, they would only be applicable to the city. This slide specifically on tax increment financing gives us the ability to capture those dollars specifically for these, the repayment of these projects. Now, with that, there'll be some issues. The schools, et cetera, won't get dollars right away, but it's a way to wall off some of that money so that when we do these projects, as valuations increase, we'll be able to capture a return on that new construction. That's real high level, simple. Mike, does that sound fair?
Yes, but I believe so. Chairman, in addition, I'd like to add, with the TIF district, all base valuations will be frozen as is. So that is bare ground. All taxing entities will get their existing operational levies off that. In addition, when the new buildings are also brought online, they'll also be able to access the debt service levy. So as far as right there, the tax increment revenues we're talking about is on the future growth.
Future growth.
Yes. Okay. So right now it's farm ground. You're still going to get the stem based valuation, but the buildings and everything will be future growth we're talking about.
Yeah, excellent point. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, Brad. So, Jake, go ahead. From the Prairie Ridge perspective, this slide gives you a little bit of a breakdown of what our high-level projections are. For that, Mike, feel free to jump in from a Pella perspective at any time. We did this in conjunction working with the city of Pella. 93 single-family homes, 45 townhomes is, I think, the initial view of the project. could be future growth from there as this project comes online. About 31.6 of new valuation is projected based on that. 23-24 is when revenues really start to come online. Total infrastructure costs related to the project, $5.6 million, and of that, the city is asking the county for about $4.7 million. I assume, Mike, there could be some variance in there up or down, depending on the cost, you know, as we go into the project. If we look at it, we're thinking probably, you know, looking at about a $5 million to $6 million outlay for this. And then that last point is the LMI that we were just speaking about. In agreement with Pella and with Knoxville on the VA, again, these dollars can be captured, and then we can use these for projects in other parts of Marion County. Again, we've never had that capability before, so my thanks to the city of Pella and to Knoxville for agreeing to that. That's a huge change for us to be able to use those dollars in that way. Jim? So from a Pella perspective, you know, on a worst case basis, and we'll get to the, I've got a slide with just the numbers, and we can talk about the combined impact. But if nothing changes, nothing is built, nothing is sold, it's about $1,363 per year on $100,000 of residential valuation for roughly $5 million of capacity. Right? Makes sense? Mike, agree? Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. For the VA, well, again, to just refresh, this is a little less defined. Mike and his team over in Pella to get more definition around what they're looking for from a planning perspective. As everybody knows, we just acquired the VA property. There are buildings still out there that need to be assessed for various environmental risks. Then we have to work on a salvage demolition project. Chris Nestby will be heading that up from a county perspective, lining up all the folks that we need to have, everything from assessing risk, creating a broad plan on development, going through demolition and salvage, RFPs, all of those things, deciding whether we have to public bid, not public bid. There will be a lot of moving parts to the VA that we have not yet defined. This will give you a high level of what we have already been talking about with the city of Knoxville and what we've been projecting from a financial perspective. As you can see, the demolition cost range is quite broad. We have estimates early on in this project that talked about demolition potentially being in that $8 million range. That's where the $8 million comes from. But given that was several years ago, I think back 14, 15, something like that, is when those first estimates were given, we thought it'd be good to maybe build in a contingency. So we have been looking at about $15 million. Now, we could get quotes that could come in well under that. That's great. That's a good thing. So all of our projections are based on the $15 million. So when we look at Pella plus VA, we look at about a $20 million total debt financing outlay. Again, if the VA property comes in less than that, that's a good thing for us. But we certainly don't want to be under those numbers and then have it exceed that by a significant amount. With that, I think from a public perspective, we certainly don't want to do that. Okay? Go ahead. Again, a worst-case scenario, nothing happens. Again, this is based on a $15 million outlay for the VA. We're looking at about $1,860 per 100,000 of residential assessed valuation. That's at the $8 million. $3,467, $100,000 valuation at the $15 million. So you can see the variance there.
Per year?
Yes.
Yeah.
So we've got those projections built in. We'll get to the slide. Yeah.
And that goes away in 15 to 20 years or when the project's done?
Well, as construction goes up, valuation, that number will come down because the valuations will increase. We'll increase the tax base. Same is true in Pella. We're working on a repayment schedule with folks in Pella right now. We do not yet have a repayment schedule for the VA with Knoxville. We would like to have it on a 20-year basis that we repay. Mike, what are we talking about? And we'll talk about Prairie Ridge here. We'll wait till the second item to get to Prairie Ridge on that. Okay, but good question, though. I bet this exhibit, I think, is a better reflection of the overall financial impact. And we've done this in several meetings, but again, I wanted to talk about it again just to keep this fresh in everybody's mind. We're not dealing with school bond issue. I get a lot of questions about school bond issue. If you want to know about school bond impacts, if you live in the Knoxville school district, talk to the school folks. They'll tell you what those numbers are. This is for the combined Pella, Prairie Ridge, and VA project projected. If you see it there in the top right-hand corner, at $20 million. So this is taking the VA at the highest. If we go to $15 million, not $8 million, and this is Pella at about $5 million. Highlighted in blue, if you combine both projects, $100,000 home, go all the way on an annual basis to those two columns on the right, it's about $46,38. On a monthly basis, about $387, I think that's what that says. Mm-hmm. All right. For those of you who are in the farming sector, agricultural sector, you can see the bottom agricultural property on $1,000 of assessed valuation. We're looking at an annual tax increase of about 75 cents per thousand. And then you can see as that goes up, 2,000 and 3,000. Okay. So that, again, is assuming 20 million. If the VA comes in less than that, obviously these numbers will be lower than that. And we hope they do. We hope they do, but we're planning on this right now. We think it's a manageable number. We certainly don't want to diminish it. In addition to all of you who are taxpayers, I am too. I also live in the Knoxville School District. So we want to pay both of those. So we certainly don't want to diminish that. But we don't leverage our debt capacity now as we've gone through the VA acquisition project. We will pay for it in other ways. We'll pay for it in social services, we'll pay for it in law enforcement, and more than likely we'll pay for it in the fact it would go to somebody else who would use it as a depreciation asset. And that cost, we can't even calculate what that would mean to us here, not just in Knoxville, but in Greene County. So I wanted to refresh everybody's mind on the numbers. And again, we're looking at 20 years. Everything is modeled on a 20-year basis. That's how we kind of model these things out. Again, hopefully the VA comes in at $100 million in preparation perspective. We'll see what those numbers are. Chris has got a lot of folks, but we're getting preliminary reports. We're starting to build our project plan on how we're going to attack the VA from everything from environmental to planning to demolition. So, any questions? Yeah.
I have another question. Have you decided who's going to take care of the grounds, as in mowing, and you're worried about people getting in the buildings, and it's dangerous, and I understand that, but there's a lot of trees out there that are dead and the limbs are falling off that I think pose quite a danger to people walking out there, and I was wondering who was going to keep the place mowed.
Yeah, that's a great question. We'll be working with the city of Knoxville on mowing, police protection, fire. Right now the city will do police patrols and fire, and they've already started those. We will put up additional gates as well to limit car traffic. We've already done that for behind the VA. People can't drive back behind now. Try to limit some of the car traffic flow. And we'll continue with some other protections out there. And eventually we may get somebody out there to trim some of those trees. Just to do that. It is. I've been out there a lot. So, good question.
Yes. When do you anticipate this will hit the tax rolls?
Yeah, I think if we look at Prairie Ridge, we're probably looking at 2021. Mike, is that fair?
It's fair.
So, if you're looking at the VA 2021-2022 is when we'll probably see that start hitting. Again, it depends on how fast we can do demolition on the VA, and we don't know that answer yet.
And that's the crux, is when the demolition takes place.
That's going to be, for us, the biggest chunk of money that will expend. On some of our smaller projects, we might even be able to use cash that we already have on hand for that. But we'll kind of see how that fleshes out. If we get a project that's $100,000 to do an asbestos report, we wouldn't probably put that in tax, from a tax perspective. But the, it's going to be demolition with the 30 days for us. Good questions. And again, we will keep this as we work through this project and things come online. So that once we get contractors and anything we have to do from a public bidding perspective, of course, we have to do that in an open meeting anyway. But as we do this, we'll make sure that we have regular updates from the public perspective on where we're at with the VA. And certainly open any questions on it. Okay.
I would just make the statement, transparency is very important to me, and I wanted to make sure that we are being very transparent. So everybody, and I ask that the media get that out also, make sure that it's very transparent so that people understand.
Will these be published then in something that's...
Well, we keep them so you can get them anytime. It's public record. When we do this, it's all public record. They're in Jake's office, and of course we help our media outlets. That's why we do this, is that they get these and publish them.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is what we get from the papers.
And this is the third time we've gone through the numbers. So, and we will continue to go through them if they change especially, but I think it's good to refresh everybody on them periodically. So we certainly, Keisha is right, we're going to be fully transparent on where we're at with the project. It's a big deal for our county. Good questions. Anything else? Any other questions? Board, Steve?
I think it's important to note, you know, I did not take all these decisions lightly on these development projects. We've been... numerous discussions with all the employers in Marion County and what their needs were, and housing was at the very top of it, because they're having a very hard time getting employees because there's no place for them to live. So that was one of the reasons that I was supportive of this, simply for the fact that there was a lot of support from all of our county employers. And I think it's very important to note, especially with the Prairie Ridge development. Obviously, it's no secret that most of the revenue is generated from the northeast part of the county, but I think it's very important that people understand that LMI funds, because that's a big player in for the rest of the county, for all these smaller incorporated cities or even unincorporated cities, that they can tap into those LMI funds to help development in those areas, which I thank the city of Pelham, Knoxville also for allowing that to happen. I mean, that's a huge piece of this puzzle.
What have LMI funds been used for in the past, or what can they be used for? What type of project?
I'd be happy to answer that, Chairman Ramey, as it applies to the Prairie Ridge development, and also Knoxville, assuming they have something similar to LMI. LMI is intended to benefit families that have a household income of 80% of the median household income in Marion County. The median household income in Marion County, somewhere between mid-60s to mid-70s, right around there. So families that would be at a household income of 80% of that, LMI funds could be used to benefit those. Now, on the Prairie Ridge development, I'll speak to that because that's the one I'm familiar with on there. That's really up to the supervisors on the discretion. These funds could be used anything from extending infrastructure in Marion County to facilitate additional low and moderate income housing in Marion County. They could also be done on a house-by-house basis. For instance, a lot of cities, what they do with these funds is they have applications for existing homes in their jurisdiction, where you might have a family that qualifies as an LMI family that needs repairs, such as a roof repair, that may be cost prohibitive. There's grant programs that can be used on an individual house to bring those houses up to standard. And so basically, in answering the questions as far as what can the funds be applied for, the Board of Supervisors has wide discretion on those funds. The key thing is they just have to benefit low and moderate income housing. They can be used anything from grant funds to assist low and moderate income housing. They can also be used for infrastructure on it. That's completely up to the Board of Supervisors, as long as it benefits low and moderate income housing.
That's a very important note. I mean, it's not like we're going to take that money and put it in the general fund. It has to be applied.
Yes, that is correct.
Yep. Thank you for that explanation. That's awesome. Any other questions?
This doesn't exactly refer to that, but is anybody aware here of there's a housing development started on 118th Place 15 to 20 years ago, and the city annexed that property, and then nothing has ever been done with it. Does anybody know if there's any plans to move forward on that, or
north of the pond at the VA?
The one that where you couldn't get access across the VA.
Okay, I know which one you're talking
about. And then a pump station failed, and
I've had a few people ask me about that, and I don't have any information on that. That'd be something we might take up with the city.
It's in the corporate limit.
Yeah. And just see what they're thinking about, because I don't know the answer to that question.
Yes, sir. He's talking about media for this agriculture. Why wasn't that in the newspapers? So people kind of have an idea of what's going on in this group on. It hasn't ever been published what this is going to be for the average farmer.
Oh, the school bond?
Yeah.
I don't know. We don't deal with school bond. I mean, for the school bond issue, that's the school board and those folks. They've been working on their media plans, I assume, to get it all out to you. They've talked to us about what the impacts could be together. And I think they even held a meeting at the Performing Arts Center.
Town talk, man.
Yeah. So I think they've tried to get that word out to folks. Like I said, from our perspective as a board, this is the third or fourth time we have talked about these numbers in public to this degree. So we've been advertising this regularly. Board, any other questions? All right, very good. With that, I entertain a motion to close discussion.
Second.
Johnner?
Aye.
McCombs?
Aye.
Ramey?
Aye. Next, we've got Resolution 2020-24, which is the setting of a public hearing date for the Prairie Ridge Urban Renewal Plan. And Mike, thank you for coming this morning for that. Jake, what do we got?
It is already setting the public hearing date of the second meeting in March. We will hold in the process of the Prairie Ridge thing project that you're working on there. It has the county and the city are creating urban renewal plans, so this is a public hearing for that. There will be more of different public hearings and things, but I believe that is the first process.
So I want to make sure I get my process right. Do we need to approve the resolution and then open the public hearing?
Actually, this is literally setting the date for the public hearing of March 24. Okay. And we'll then publish this in the newspaper to send notice to jurisdictions and some things, further steps. But I believe today the only step is this resolution setting this date.
Just setting the date. Mike, is that your understanding?
Yes, Chairman Ramey. In fact, we actually did this at our last city council meeting, and we'll be going. Our public hearing date is actually set 1 week in advance of Marion County on it. So, as Jake stated, this is simply setting the public hearing date. It's the first step in the development process for the Prairie Ridge development. It is also important to note, Chairman Ramey, that we will be holding a consultation of all affecting taxing entities that is scheduled tomorrow at 1 p.m. at the Pella City Hall. In addition, on this, we will also be consulting with our school district to extend the life of Prairie Ridge development. So what you showed up there with the 20-year life, that is based on current state law. The school does have the authority to extend the development and the life of it, which would be better financial terms for the county. We will be making that presentation and anticipate a successful agreement with the Public Community School District on March 9th. So more on there. But in essence, as Jake said, this is just the public hearing date. We're also going to be holding a public hearing date at the City of Pella. And so this will be inviting lots of public input on the project.
Very good. Appreciate that, Mike. Thank you. Board, any questions on the resolution establishing the public hearing date for the Prairie Ridge Urban Renewal Plan?
I have none.
Keisha?
just other than just looking through, I mean, we will discuss this later, Mike, or was this something, do you get what I'm asking? Mm-hmm. This is just literally setting the date, right?
We're setting the date, we'll have the public hearing, which we have, like we always do, we do public hearing, and we have a discussion item for the board.
Okay.
So we'll do both.
I don't have a problem with setting the date.
Mark, just for clarification, this sets the date of March 5th for the consultation for the county creating the urban plan.
Right.
At that 9:00 in the morning.
Okay. Thanks, Jay. If there is no, I'd entertain a motion on Resolution 2020.
Make motion to approve Resolution 2020-24.
Second.
Okay. McCombs?
Aye.
Ramey?
Aye.
Johnner?
Aye.
Jake? Establish that date. Very good. Thanks, Mike.
Well, thank you.
Appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
So it's the 5th, right? That date was the
5th.
Yeah, we're ours is the 26th or tomorrow, so okay. We're doing two consultations.
So next we have one.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. So we got 2017 premium structure for our employee benefit plan, Lisa.
This is just standardizing, setting a resolution to the discussion that we've had previously in the past that all Marion County employees will now pay the exact same premiums for their health insurance, dental, and vision.
Okay. And that's based on plan type and mm-hmm. all the deductibles and everything else. Okay. Right. Steve, Keisha, any questions?
I don't have anything.
Well, we talked extensively about this in the past. You see the third whereas. That's one of the major changes. There are no questions. I would entertain a motion on 2020-17.
Will any of those employees affected be notified in writing then prior to July 1st?
I don't know. Do we do an additional writing on top of this?
I assume, I'll have to talk to Thomas Murphy, but I would assume that at renewal you'll find out what the new rates are just like everybody else would. Because I don't know what the rates are July 1, because this doesn't go into effect until July 1.
Right.
So I would assume at renewal is when we let everybody else know what the rates are.
Yeah, that makes
That's
sense.
My thought, but...
Yeah, I would assume that we would update and let those all know that, I mean, is this something that has to go into the handbook or anything? Do we change anything?
This is not currently in the handbook.
Okay.
But the resolution just makes it clean.
Okay.
So moving forward July 1, this is what the board intends to do.
Okay. All right. Okay.
So this resolution takes care of that. There will be no written notification is what you're saying.
I don't look for that. No. Okay. But that's the board's discretion.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. All right. Is there a motion on 2020-17? Discussion.
Yeah, I make motion that we approve Resolution 2020-17.
I'll second that.
Ramey?
Aye.
Johnner?
Aye.
McCombs?
Aye.
Our annual establishment of Veterans Affairs guidelines. Mike?
Yes, sir.
What we got?
We got a little change this year. The sheet that came out establishing the National Poverty Guidelines for 2020 dropped the 130 section out that I was using, and I moved it back to 125, where I used to always have been pretty much in that area. And it goes in line pretty much across the state with the counterparts that I work with. establishing fair income guidelines for those that come in needing assistance. Community services and those kind of things, just sent out a whole lot of base information on their website. They're running from 100 to 150 to 125, or varying from every county to every county. So
sure.
My recommendation is drop it back to what I've always pretty much been doing.
Steve Keesh, any questions? And Mike, your board is also, you've kind of reviewed this with your board and everything, and they've agreed to that number.
Okay. What do we use, Kim?
Ours is proposed at 138%, because that's where Medicaid starts.
Will that cause confusion?
Yeah, that's my only concern is I don't want it to be cause confusion.
Okay. And the confusion would be what?
Well, I mean, obviously you have VA doing, you know, and then they're probably at 138 and 125, I guess. Consistency is my thoughts, but.
Well, I'm not sure, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, when someone comes in, you don't tell them that, hey, we set our limits at 125% of federal poverty guidelines. Kim?
No. Well,
but it's also that they know.
And if they're a veteran, we'll refer them over to.
Yeah. I see them as different issues. My concern with Mike's group, and the same would be with Kim, is that when we're looking at public health or the VA, we don't want to be too far afield of surrounding counties. Is that fair?
That's very fair.
Because if we have a richer program than surrounding counties, there are consequences to that.
Okay.
So I think we want to be balanced so that people in Marion County go to their representative, people in, other counties go to theirs.
That makes sense.
And if the respective boards have agreed to those things, I guess I don't see the issue.
Okay.
I'm open to if you guys have a.
Think that.
But if you're okay with that, I'd entertain a motion to approve the guidelines as submitted by Mike.
I will point out, too, the one that I blocked off in writing that says 200%. That's the odds that I'm against when I do a Iowa Veterans Trust Fund application.
That's the trust.
So it's a state, they go up to 200%.
Right.
So, I mean, it varies over, and when you see the different ones, I never have, in the years I've been here, run into a problem of explaining or talking about the income guidelines of where I cut off.
Right.
I think in what Kim was saying, I think the last couple of years of what came out for me to operate from was more along the Medicaid guidelines. And so I went to 130-something 1 year, 133, I think, the next year. And this year, the new one came out, so I just dropped it back to my norm.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I don't have an issue with it. I guess I'm fine with it. But Steve, you should entertain a motion to either accept or, if there's further discussion, we can have that.
I'm just not a fan of not having it consistent. That's just me.
Then what do you want to do? Do you want Mike to be the same as Kim or Kim to be the same as Mike?
I think that we should go with what Medicaid should be. I think it should be 138. That's my thought.
What would that do, Mike?
It would raise the funding up to where I would have to allow more services to veterans without you making an income enough that they can get by without me going to 138. It's a budget thing in the end. I have very few veterans that I'm dealing with that's on Medicaid. They're all getting VA benefits.
So we're looking at two separate issues.
It's entirely two separate issues.
Okay.
Okay, I move that we establish the fair income guidelines as proposed.
Second.
Johnner?
Aye.
McCombs?
Aye.
Ramey?
Aye. Next, we have some appointments. Marion County Development Commission, Carla?
That is correct. The first three are reappointments. Last year, we redid our bylaws and kind of changed the area designations. The last one, Mindy, would be a new appointment from the Knoxville area and a vacant seat that we had on the commission.
Very good. Jake, we can approve these en masse, correct?
I think so in this case. That's all right. It's your call. But we can put it in the minutes.
So, board, we can approve en masse. We can have a discussion on any individual if you'd like. Open for discussion.
So is Susan's up then if we are approved on 6/30 of 2020?
Yeah, I didn't know what to do there. Technically, because of how we rotate the board, so we don't have everybody rotating off the same time, her term would actually end in 2020. That would be the end of her first term. We do have term limits for our commissioners, so they can serve 3 3-year terms. This is the 2020 would be the end of her first term.
Okay.
So then in June we would then reappoint her for another 3 years, just to keep that. Rob and David are on a different term, as well as the Mindy position. Those are the ones that would be the ones that we needed to have passed July 1. So it's just kind of cleaning up things a little bit so that we can get everybody on the right rotation after doing the bylaws changes. So it is incorrect up on the board.
Yeah,
it's correct in the agenda.
Just making sure.
The agenda's right, yeah.
So the PowerPoint has 2022, which I apologize because I typed that. I believe that your agenda.
I was going by this.
The agenda is correct.
The agenda is correct. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The agenda is correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
So then in June we'll probably have hers, but we may have others as well that we did not have to kind of change their designation as far as where they were serving from. And basically, just to understand it, we went to more of a school district area versus city limits, and so that's where some of it changed a little bit in our bylaws, if you remember that when we brought that forward to you.
Yep.
It's just a little easier to identify where people are from versus sometimes we get stuck with the fact somebody lives a mile outside of town, but they're in that school district. So it just kind of makes us go by school districts. Up there, we just call it area, but that's generally in our bylaws what it says is school districts.
Okay. No, fair enough. Thanks, Carla. Appreciate that. Any other discussion? Board?
Okay.
All right. Is there a motion to approve these appointments?
I make the motion to approve all of the appointments.
Second.
McCombs?
Aye.
Ramey?
Aye.
Johnner?
Aye.
Thank you. Next item, we have a tax sale certificate, number 1992-92-191.
Okay, so this is another tax sale assignment. We've started to go through properties that have significant delinquencies on them. This is one that has not been paid in about 30 years, which is the inception of our solutions software. And when I gave this to Ann's office to kind of research for me, she found out that actually this 5 acres belonged to MD and Eva Flanders and was deeded to the state in 1933 in order to create a small state park of some type. My understanding is that the original intent was that that land around there maybe would be developed and this would stand as some sort of, you know, green space for that area. That has not happened. The state, I don't even know that they knew that it had actually been deeded to them. They apparently found that in some sort of inventory search and in the late 80s, 1990-ish, they deeded that back to Indy and Eva Flanders, who had passed away, obviously, 60 years prior to that at that point.
Okay.
So that's the last ownership record that we have available to us.
And no heirs or assigns or anything like
nope.
that?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. So at this point, I mean, regardless of the ownership trail, we are completely within our rights because of the back taxes to assign this tax bill to an adjoining landowner per the guidelines that have been set forth previously by the board. I contacted both adjoining landowners, Jerry Johnson and Sean Pitts with PCWDM, and Jerry only wanted the land. The other adjoining landowner did not want it. His position was, I would take it because I want to prevent anybody, any other third party accessing my land to get to this 5 acres, but it's not really a great piece of land. I don't need it. I don't want it badly. Prevention purposes only were his intent. This is Sean Pitts.
Sean, welcome.
He is really, I think, according to Ann, the more logical party to acquire that parcel because he does have two parcels. As you can see, he's got parcel two, and then he's also got that bottom parcel, 18195, is also his. So really, he encompasses both the north and the south end of this parcel. So in conversations with him, you know, my proposal is that we assign this county held tax sale to him. I made it clear that at that point it becomes his responsibility to contact legal counsel and execute a tax sale deed based on that assignment.
Okay, very good. Board, any questions or discussion on this proposal?
I went up and talked to Michaela this morning because I did have some questions on it, but and it gave me a better perspective to the, would be to the right, or maybe you'd say east or whatever, south, I guess. That section there is a cemetery, so I thought, well, because what would that be? Would that be four? What do you call that right there? That area?
I would probably call that four.
Well, yeah, that's a cemetery, and then is it my understanding, is it a deep ravine? Sean, it's a very deep ravine, the area that you're... Because it looks all wooded, very deep, nothing. I just wanted to make sure, doing our due diligence. And just when it's in regards to 5 acres, so that's why I wanted to make sure. But after looking at it further, I see that, I don't have a problem with it.
And really, to that end, anytime we have a property that is delinquent more than 2 years, and then goes a county held tax sale has been active on that property, we are within our rights to assign that to someone as long as they meet the guidelines that you set forth. So in this case, I'm taxes are my wheelhouse, not whether land is developable or not. But it does seem like there has not been any interest in many, many years. So I would consider it a good candidate for assignment.
I know it's just good. Thank you for all the work and the due diligence on it. Is there a motion to approve 2020-26?
I move that we approve resolution 2020-26.
I'll second.
Motion and support. Thing.
Rainey?
Aye.
Donner?
Aye.
Aye.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean.
Appreciate it. I think you're up again.
This is actually the same one. Oh. This is just the agreement to assign it.
Oh, okay.
So
we have to put that as well. Is there a motion to approve?
I have a motion to approve certificate 1992-92191.
Second.
Johnny?
Aye.
McComb?
Aye.
Rainey?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tim, very good general assistance policy.
sent out to each of you some draft policy around what the general assistance program will and will not pay for, and it just provides some clarity on what we will do going forward. What I did was I took some policy from a few other counties, and we looked at those and drafted some, and then I brought the staff together that routinely works with those folks that are in need, and then Keisha came over and we kind of walked through each of the sections. And so this is what we came up with. And the financial, as we talked earlier, is set at 138% of poverty, and that is because that's where adult Medicaid starts. So that's what it was last year too. Right. So we really didn't change that other than changing the numbers for the new poverty level.
Right. But the biggest change administratively, Kim, is what? When we look at what we're doing with general assistance now, we're taking a holistic approach.
Yes, we are.
So the client comes in and needs general assistance. It's going to be now reviewing them on a case-by-case basis to see what other things are going on.
Correct. Okay. Correct. So somebody comes into public health and says that they would like to access some assistance through general assistance. They meet with a care coordinator, and we have a care coordinator assigned each day. That's if somebody walks in, that's who they see. And they go over things like, are you on Medicaid? Let's get you on Medicaid if you're eligible for Medicaid. They do a basic budget with the person. So the person brings in their expenses and their income, the proof of both. And then they look at that and see if there's some long-term help for them and some long-term changes that they might consider. We've also made some changes in how we do food packages. So if somebody comes in for they need assistance with food packet or for food, they used to just get a voucher that they go to the grocery store and pick what they want. Now we link them first with the varying programs that are available in the community, and then if there's nothing available to them locally, then we'll provide them a food package, and we go ahead and create that food package and do it online, and they just go pick it up at Hy-Vee.
Good.
And it's worked real well. It took a couple of tries to get it to go really smoothly just because we're paying for it and somebody else is picking it up, so we had to like bridge that gap, but it's working pretty well. And everybody seems to be pretty happy with it. Other changes, we are requiring and just like everything else we do at the health department, if there's money expended, I require receipts to match that so that everything that we do will pass an audit. And so that's been a little bit of a change for landlords, where before it was a little less structured. And so now we've got a little more structure in that. As far as the time that our care coordinators are spending, we've got a kind of a funding hierarchy for that. So if the person that they're serving fits one of the criteria for one of the public health programs, the staff member can assign their time to one of those grants. And then if that person they're serving doesn't fit a grant criteria, then the county will eat their time, I guess, is what to call it. So it seems to be working pretty well. I think that we've given people some additional long-term help that they may not have been able to access before just because of the connection to the public health piece. So,
excellent.
I think it's going okay. The staff seems to think it's working. It doesn't rely on me being there. So we've got this will provide enough structure because we have been kind of winging it a little bit. As we lifted this off, but this will provide structure so that that it's certain to be consistent across staff members.
Kim, also, I think you might want to mention to the public that we're looking at last resort.
Correct.
So for our county, for helping.
The county is the funder of last resort for general assistance. And I don't know if that's been what's in the past, and it doesn't matter to me that much, but going forward, the county is the funder of last resort for this. So if there's something else out there that will help that person, we plug them into that first. And so people are still getting served. It looks a little different. I think they're being served differently, more from a public health perspective, because we just have so many more resources that my staff know about.
So. Good. Well, sounds good. Thank you.
Yeah, Cameron, thank you for taking hold of this and running with it. I'm impressed with what you've done so far here. I'd like to thank Keisha for going out and spending her time and figuring that out too. I think it's something that we needed to get a handle on. I'm kind of a stickler for details, so I'm impressed.
Right, and it's important that everybody understand that this is still under the jurisdiction of the Board of Supervisors. It does not bring it under the jurisdiction of the Board of Health.
Right.
Because in code, it's under the supervisors.
Correct.
So it will remain there.
Good. Thanks, Kim. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it. Is there a motion for approval of the general assistance policy for 2020?
So moved.
Second.
Yeah. McCombs?
Aye.
Ramey?
Aye.
Johnner?
Aye.
Excellent. Next discussion, we'll move East Elementary. Where to begin with that? So everybody knows that the Board of Supervisors has approved the construction of an elevator, a new elevator, in the courthouse to replace the existing elevator that will be worn out since it will no longer have really the ability to be used in May of 20 this year, right?
Yeah,
May 1st. Loses certification. It's not ADA compliant. A whole host of issues with that elevator. So we have asked the county offices to work on a plan to relocate operations. And Chris, I don't know if you have updates on that as far as where we're at with the plan.
Well, besides my department and Director of IT's department, we've got a comprehensive plan right now to get not only county services shifted over there in office spaces that work, but most importantly, we think about court services that take place here. We have courtrooms set up over there, or at least on print. They're not set up quite yet. And Andrew Hahn has found a way and got good quoted prices to get the IT infrastructure up in place.
Good. Good. Andrew, any issues? Do you see any issues at all right now?
No issues, just ensuring our timing with the contractors and things.
Right. And Chris, now that we've accepted bids, we have a contractor, we've gone through that process. We're working with the city of Knoxville right now on a lease agreement between Marion County for the use of East. I don't anticipate any issues. The comments that came back were very minor. Things like that got Ed working on to clean up. But assuming that gets done in the next week and a half, what are we looking at as far as a timetable?
So preemptively, I blocked off time with a moving contractor out of Des Moines, just just for the simple fact this has to happen. Moving has to happen very quickly because we're thinking Friday evening we have to be open for business again Monday morning. So the moving contractor we have blocked off from March 13th through mid-April, starting on Friday evenings. Everything moved, set up, and in place. Probably going to be over 4 weekends that we have to do that to keep the cost down both to the county and the citizens to make the move, but also to ensure that if we do move an office space over, we have time throughout the weekend to ensure that office space is functioning from an IT perspective, from a staff perspective, so when the public comes in, their confidence is they're going to be able to maintain the services they require without any hiccups.
So your expectation is the move begins on the 13th?
That is the first day I have blocked off.
Okay. If we get an agreement done prior to that, have you talked with Jerry yet? Can we move?
So we
some
have,
items early?
The boiler had a boiler inspection done on it. It did pass that inspection, but the boiler has not been reassembled. So along with Jerry and our department, we'll have to get the boiler reassembled. We have to get a water meter put back in because that entire system when the library left was drained and put away as if the building was going to be taken away. So we need to get that system back up and running. My goal would be from a facility standpoint to have at least an office or two ready to go by the 13th because we know we're not going to move the entire courthouse over the course of 1 weekend.
Sure.
So let's say it's assessor's office or auditor's office. We get those offices moved. There are going to be some larger offices if we think about treasurer's office that have multiple functioning spaces that we have to think about and the flow of traffic so we don't impede the needs of the public to get stuff done. So those will probably be pushed off more till second or third move to make sure that those spaces function well. We've met with 5th District Court Services. So Christopher Peters came out to the 3014 office. They're completely on board with the move and the plan as is for the two courtrooms where the judges would be located, where recorders would be located, where we'd have a jury room. They're working on rounding up furniture to bring into that space to ensure that they can function from that standpoint. But all in all, the plan has come together really well in a short amount of time, and I think by the 13th, hopefully we can make our first jump over there. A lot of it's going to depend on the IT infrastructure side of it. Talking with Andrew, I don't see a reason that we're not going to have at least the IT infrastructure in place to handle those, and I'll let him speak more to that.
Yeah, I mean, just from the contractor that we've used for all of our other low voltage wiring and things, there might not be every little part and piece ready to go by the 13th, but if we've identified the offices that will be moving, we can for sure have, you know, a subset of the offices ready to go by then. The contractor thinks it'll only take about a week to do the wiring in there to do the entire everything that needs to get done. There is some other vendors and things that we have to deal with, our internet provider and things. And so the sooner we know on timetables and the sooner we get the building, access to the building, the better from my perspective.
Okay. Andy, thank you. Is it possible, Chris, and I don't know who would do this, I assume somebody out of your area, maybe Andrew, somebody out of your area, is there a project document that's going to kind of list by the order of when we move and who's going when and IT's up and running, just something for the sake of good order, especially from a board standpoint, that we can kind of keep track of milestones, similar to what we're doing with the VA project?
I've got a project document for my department side of it. Andrew and I will get together and add IT infrastructure into that. And then the biggest thing is going to be we're going to have to look at the timetable for which departments move first.
Yeah.
That is not decided at this point. My hope was by the end of this week or the first part of next week, we'd have a general idea of what department, because their workload shifts and varies. I mean, you think about Michaela's department, that's busy pretty much all the time.
Right.
So we have to be really picky about when we move that department to make sure that it functions exactly up and running as it needs to come Monday morning. So I'm thinking I'll be talking with directors this week to make sure that we have the rest of that put in place, and then I'll deliver a copy to all three of you.
And then probably in conjunction with that, we need to have a pretty significant media blitz
Yeah,
over the next several weeks, correct?
And being able to update our website to be able to tell that people to at and those that have Facebook, being able to put it out there just to try to get as many people as we can.
Well, yeah, why don't we talk about that offline? Who's working on that piece? Do we have somebody designated for that?
For media outlay?
Yeah.
Not yet.
Okay.
Well, adding to that, I was notified this morning by Chris that obviously we're going to be moving to 3014 East Main here. Actually, I'm going to help Chris this afternoon move my office out there, whatever help he needs. But we need to be aware that our next public meeting will probably be at 3014 East Main, not here.
Right. That would be part of the... Yeah.
And I would like to have you both maybe consider that maybe that be a permanent move.
And I'm glad you brought that up, Steve. I think
because then we can free this space in.
Yep.
This is not big enough, I won't lie.
Well, plus we have monitor. It's all set up out there with monitors
already.
And better visibility and things like that. So, but yeah, we'll talk. We'll keep that online to talk about Steve. That's an excellent suggestion. Yes.
And for the offices that are sitting here wondering where they would be in the order, some of these are dependent on state connectivity and the schedule, what we can do from that perspective. So probably those offices, Michaela's third floor, that use state connectivity would be later in the project from IT's perspective.
Okay.
So just so you guys are thinking about that a little bit.
Well, good. I mean, you and Chris worked that out. Yeah. If there's something from an IT standpoint that says, hey, hold these people back till the end. We need to get that in order. So we'll talk more about media and how we approach that. And then, Steve, to your point, that our next board meeting will be at 3014, so we'll have a public notice perspective. That's good. A lot of things, a lot of moving parts to this, but I'm confident we'll get it pulled off. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
All right.
Well, it's going to be painful, but it's going to have to be done.
Does the board have a timetable on signing a lease?
I'm going to try to get that done by Friday.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. But let's not say try. I will get that done by Friday.
I'm assuming they should be very receptive.
Yes. There's no issues. There's no issues. I want people to sign it. I'm not worried about that. Okay. With that, entertain a motion to close discussion. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you,
department heads.
Yeah,
everybody. Your staff.
Does anybody else
Big
have any
deal.
Questions on that? On anything?
Again, public, we will try to be transparent as possible and let you know when we move and how that goes. So, do our best.
Motion to close. Is there a motion?
I make a motion to close the discussion.
Second.
Ramey?
Aye.
Johnner?
Aye.
Aye.
Very good. Any updates? We're good in the order, Steve.
Well, none of them are aware of, like everybody knows, I've been gone for a while, so at some of my meetings, I'm just now getting back up to speed on.
Yep. All right. Keisha?
Planning and zoning last night. We went over the Prairie Ridge, so continue to be growth and development over in Color. We're going to be talking, we're going to have some special sessions in March and in April with more development.
Do we have any update on the 2080?
I'll follow up with Mike this week.
This changes things.
Okay.
Ooh, but, yeah, I didn't know this was.
That's my update. All right. With that, I entertain a motion to adjourn.
Hi.
What's up?
No, I'm sorry.